All right, strap in, everybody, because today we are going deep on a concept called planetary solvency. You might not have heard this term before, but stick with us. It's fascinating, really,
Yeah.
and it's going to make you think.
It really is. It's a big question. Like, if Earth were a company, how would we assess its financial health?
Ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah, would it be, thriving? Would it be kind of barely getting by? Or would it be heading straight for bankruptcy?
So we're not just talking about the environment here in a general sense. We're
Right.
talking about the systems that actually underpin our entire society and economy,
Exactly.
like our civilization.
Yeah, and what's really cool about this, we're diving into this report by the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries. Those are the folks who assess risk for things like insurance and pensions, right? And Exeter University. And they're bringing that same risk assessment lens to the planet as a whole.
So instead of calculating the odds of, like, I don't know, a car accident or house fire, they're calculating the odds of, let's say, the Amazon rainforest collapsing or the global food system failing.
Yeah, things like that. And they're looking at how these systems all,
It's a much
interact.
more holistic approach than we usually see with environmental reports.
Yeah, exactly. It's a much more systemic approach. And it's challenging the traditional way that we think about environmental problems.
Yeah, it's making me rethink things already, to be honest.
Yeah, we tend to address things in silos, right? Climate change is over here, biodiversity loss is over there. But this report forces us to actually confront like the interconnectedness of all of it.
So that brings us to this idea of planetary insolvency. I know you mentioned it earlier,
Sure.
but can we unpack that a little bit more? What does it actually mean for a planet to become insolvent?
Right. Well, it means that essentially Earth's natural systems, the things that we rely on for, clean air and water, stable climate, all those things are so degraded that they can't support human society in its current form.
So, like a state of societal and economic disruption?
Yeah.
Wow.
Driven by the loss of those systems.
That sounds pretty catastrophic.
Yeah.
What are some of the specific risks that could lead us to that state of insolvency?
Well, the report points to a whole range of issues, but some of the most pressing are things like climate change, biodiversity loss, depletion of natural resources like fresh water, fertile soil. And the scary part is, we're already seeing those impacts.
Yeah, we're living them
Yeah, we're seeing them.
every day.
More extreme weather, food shortages are becoming more common, conflicts over resources are on the rise.
It's a pretty stark picture they paint. But is there any good news? Like, is it even possible to reverse course at this point?
Well, the report, it does offer some hope by outlining a framework for how we can move towards greater planetary solvency.
Okay, so there's still a chance.
They call them the resilience principles. It's a mouthful, I know,
Okay.
but it's about using the best science to make better decisions, manage risk effectively, and build a more sustainable and resilient future.
Okay, so it sounds like there's a lot we can do,
Yeah, there are things we can do.
but it's not going to be easy.
Not necessarily, no.
What are some of the biggest challenges we face in achieving that solvency?
I'd say one of the biggest challenges is our current economic system, which is, very much focused on short-term profits over long-term sustainability. We're essentially incentivized to exploit the planet's resources without really accounting for the cost.
So we're basically trapped in a system that's
Yeah.
driving us towards bankruptcy.
It can feel that way, yes.
Oh, wow.
But the report argues that we have the power to change that. It calls for this shift in mindset from seeing the environment as something separate from the economy to recognizing that a healthy planet is actually the foundation for a thriving economy.
Yeah. It's like that old saying, there's no economy on a dead planet. But
Exactly.
how do we actually make that shift? Where do we even begin?
Well, the report highlights the importance of things like investing in renewable energy, protecting biodiversity, and promoting sustainable consumption patterns. But it also stresses that these technical solutions are only part of the equation.
Oh, okay.
We also need a fundamental change in our values and priorities.
So it's not just about changing our light bulbs or recycling more. It's about changing the way we think about our relationship with the planet as a whole, as a
Exactly.
system that we're part of.
Recognizing that we're part of the Earth system, not separate from it. And our actions have consequences, not just for ourselves, but for, future generations and all the other species that share this planet with us.
This is all really deep stuff. but it's also incredibly important.
I can say anything.
And I have to say, it's already making me rethink my own choices and priorities. I'm guessing our listeners are probably having similar thoughts.
I would imagine.
So, speaking of solutions, the report does actually lay out some steps we can take, both individually and collectively. And that's what we're going to be exploring in the next part of our deep dive.
Absolutely.
I am very excited to get into that.
Stay tuned.
We just finished up a pretty heavy discussion there about what it means for a planet to become insolvent. Now let's get into what we can actually do about it. The report lays out these resilience principles. What are those? And how can they help us kind of steer towards a more sustainable future?
Right. Well, it's kind of a mouthful, I know. Resilience stands for Recognize Earth System Limits, Ensure Distributional Fairness, Integrate Across Disciplines, Limit Systemic Risk, Invest in Nature, Incentivize Regeneration, Learn and Adapt, and Engage with Stakeholders. So it's basically a framework for decision-making that takes into account the interconnectedness of planetary systems and the long-term consequences of our actions.
So it's not just about, you know, reducing emissions or protecting endangered species. Mm-hmm. It's about really fundamentally changing the way we approach problems and make decisions.
Exactly.
Wow.
It's about shifting from this kind of reactive approach, where we only address problems once they become crises,
right,
to a more proactive and preventative approach,
yeah,
where we're, you know, constantly assessing risk and taking steps to mitigate them before they spiral out of control.
And I think a good example of that that they highlight in the report is how traditional economic models often fail to account for the true cost of environmental damage, like, say, deforestation of the Amazon.
Right.
On paper, it might look like a good deal. Short-term profits for timber companies, jobs created. But what about those long-term consequences?
Exactly.
The loss of biodiversity, the reduced rainfall, the impact on global climate regulation.
Yeah, all those hidden costs.
Right. And those don't show up on a balance sheet.
Right. They don't.
So how do we even start to incorporate those kinds of hidden costs into our decision making?
Well, that's where that Recognize Earth System Limits principle comes in. It's about understanding that the planet has, you know, finite resources. We can't just keep pushing those limits without consequences. So we need to start valuing natural capital, things like clean air, water, fertile soil, just as highly as we value financial capital.
So instead of just asking, how much will this project cost in dollars and cents?
Mm.
We also need to be asking, how much will this project cost in terms of its impact on the planet's life support systems?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if we're serious about planetary solvency, those planetary costs need to be factored into every decision from, you know, individual consumer choices to government policies.
Speaking of policies, the report also talks about the importance of limiting systemic risk. Mm. Can you elaborate on what that means in the context of planetary solvency?
Yeah, so systemic risk in this context refers to the risk of cascading failures across these interconnected systems. Think of it like dominoes, right? If one domino falls, it can trigger a chain reaction that topples the whole row. And that's what we're facing with the planet. We've got climate change, biodiversity loss, resource depletion, social inequality, all these interconnected challenges. If we don't manage these risks effectively, we could see a domino effect. That leads to a breakdown of the entire Earth system.
So we can't just treat these issues in isolation anymore.
No, not if we want to avoid planetary insolvency. We need to start thinking in terms of systems, recognizing that actions in one area can have ripple effects across the entire planet.
And what about the engage with stakeholders principle?
Yeah.
Who are these stakeholders and why is their involvement so crucial?
Right. Well, stakeholders are really everyone who has a stake in the health of the planet, which is pretty much everyone.
Yeah, I guess so.
It includes individuals, communities, businesses, governments, scientists, activists, you name it. And the report really emphasizes that achieving planetary solvency, it's not something that can be done from the top down. It requires buy-in and active participation from all levels of society.
So it's not just about experts coming up with the solutions.
Yeah.
And imposing them on the rest of us.
No, it's about creating a more inclusive and collaborative process where everyone has a voice and a role to play.
It's like that old saying, if you want to go fast, go alone.
Yeah.
If you want to go far, go together.
Exactly.
We've got to work together on this.
And the report stresses that this kind of collaborative approach is essential for addressing the ensure distributional fairness principle. We need to ensure that the benefits of a more sustainable future are shared equitably across all communities, not just a select few.
So planetary solvency isn't just about saving the planet. It's also about creating a more just and equitable world for everyone.
That's a key point. It recognizes that environmental issues are often very deeply intertwined with social justice issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, communities that are already marginalized and disadvantaged are often the ones hit hardest by the impacts of climate change and environmental degradation.
Yeah, like in adding insult to injury, they contribute the least to the problem, but end up bearing the brunt of the consequences.
Right.
Doesn't seem fair.
So planetary solvency is also about redressing those imbalances and ensuring that everyone has access to, you know, clean air, water, and a healthy environment. It's about creating a world where everyone can thrive, not just survive.
This whole concept of planetary solvency is really starting to paint a very different picture for me of what a sustainable future could actually look like.
Yeah.
It's not just about reducing our carbon footprint. It's about transforming our entire relationship with the planet
and
with each other.
Absolutely.
I find it really inspiring, but I also have to admit, it feels a little daunting. Like, where do we even begin to put all this into practice?
It's a big challenge for sure. But the good news is the report does provide some really concrete recommendations for how we can start moving in the right direction.
Okay, that's what I want to hear. Let's dive into those recommendations in the next part of our deep dive.
Sounds good to me.
All right, lay it on me. What are those recommendations? We've talked a lot about the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to, like, what does it actually look like in action? What can individuals, communities, businesses, governments actually do to make this vision of planetary solvency a reality?
Well, one of the biggest things they emphasize is this need for a fundamental shift in our economic system. We need to move away from this model that prioritizes just endless growth on a finite planet.
Right. Infinite growth on a finite planet doesn't make a lot of sense. But what would this new model even look like?
Yeah, they don't prescribe like a specific model, but they point to several different alternative frameworks like donut economics, which emphasizes meeting human needs within ecological limits. And it highlights the need for these new metrics of progress that go beyond just GDP, things that account for well-being, social equity, environmental health.
So instead of just measuring how much money we're making, we need to start measuring how well we're living within the boundaries of our planet.
Exactly.
Makes sense to me.
And that leads into another key recommendation, which is investing in natural capital.
Like protecting forests. Restoring wetlands, improving soil health.
All that, yeah.
Okay.
These are the foundations of a healthy planet and a resilient economy. So the report recommends things like creating financial mechanisms that incentivize these kinds of investments.
Okay, so give me an example.
Like payments for ecosystem services,
where
landowners are compensated for managing their land in ways that benefit the environment.
So it's a win-win. Landowners get paid and the planet benefits.
Exactly.
I like that. But what about individual actions? What can everyday people do to contribute to a more solvent planet?
Yeah, so the report really stresses that. Individual actions, while important, can't solve this problem alone.
Right.
We need systemic change to really address the root causes.
But our choices still matter.
Absolutely.
Good.
It's about recognizing that. Our collective choices have a huge impact, and we can all be part of the solution.
So what kinds of things?
Well, they highlight things like shifting to more sustainable diets, reducing our overall consumption, and advocating for policies that support planetary solvency.
And what about that recommendation about policymakers getting like training in climate and ecological literacy?
Yeah.
That seems like a really kind of practical step we could take.
Yeah, it is. The report argues that if policymakers are going to make informed decisions about the planet, they need to actually understand the science behind these issues.
Makes sense.
You know, they need to be able to think systemically and to recognize that interconnectedness of planetary systems.
So instead of just focusing on those short-term economic gains, they need to be thinking about the long-term health and well-being of the planet and its people.
Exactly. Yeah. And that brings us back to this question of how planetary solvency could change our political discourse, our consumer behavior, and even our values. It's a big question and one that we're only beginning to grapple with.
Yeah, it really challenges us to rethink our relationship with the planet and with each other.
Sure.
It's not just about saving the environment. It's about creating a more just and equitable and sustainable world for everyone.
It's about recognizing that we're all in this together.
Right.
And our collective fate is tied to the fate of the planet.
Well, that's a powerful message. And honestly, one that gives me hope this whole concept of planetary solvency has given me like a new perspective on what's possible. This has been an incredible deep dive, and I really want to thank you for sharing your expertise with us.
It's been my pleasure.
And to our listeners, I hope this has been as thought-provoking for you as it's been for me. Keep diving deep. Keep asking questions. And keep engaging in this crucial conversation about the future of our planet.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
That's it for this deep dive. We'll see you next time.